Well, good afternoon, everyone, and please keep your fingers crossed. Before we go any further, I'd like to much to your probably relief, just say that it's not just me and Jake on this podcast. Really pleased to introduce Henry, who is brand ambassador for Davey Champagne in, I think, in the UK and Ireland, Henry. That's right,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, in the UK. We're not selling in Ireland anymore, so.
Sorry, in the UK.
Yeah.
Lovely Brexit.
Yeah. No, thank you for having me on.
No,
it's a
welcome.
Pleasure to be here.
No, it's a pleasure to have you here. It really is. So we've worked quite a lot with you over the last year or so.
Yeah.
And it's lovely to have you on the podcast today. Thank you for joining us.
Welcome.
We always like traditionally to start with a little drink of something. So Jake, do you want to talk us through what we're drinking today? Because it's perhaps a little bit more challenging than sometimes.
Yeah, you haven't confirmed exactly what it is to me, but... knowing of the four wines that we've got on the machine downstairs, this is the most funky of them all. It's fairly distinctive on the nose, I think you'd probably agree.
It really is.
What was the word you used? Challenging.
Challenging.
That's super unfair. I love it. It's a very mineral, volcanic, sort of Atlantic coast style wine. So this is from Tenerife. Palomino is the grape variety, or Listan Blanco, as they would call it in Tenerife. From the producers Onvenate, which are... They're a fairly famous group of winemakers working across Tenerife and some small parts of Spain, producing very sort of low intervention, very terroir driven styles of wine. I really love it, but it won't be to everyone's taste. It's got that really sort of volcano like.
Volcanic, maybe?
I was going to use volcanic, but volcano like sulfur nose. So really expressive, really aromatic, quite sort of herbal and fresh. I think it's great. But I could absolutely see why people wouldn't fall in love with this.
No,
it's a thinker.
I would get that it divides opinion, and you do have to think about it. And there are some wines that make me think about them so much that they make my head hurt.
So you don't like this wine?
No, I think I do. I've had it before, and I think I do. I've had a couple of sips now, and it really is growing on me. But there are some wines, as you know, that make my head think too much, and I find it a bit stressful and don't enjoy them.
Yeah.
There's only one I can think of that's done that to me in the shop in the last year or so, though.
Interesting, I think, is the word you used.
Yeah, that's always ominous, isn't it, when someone says a wine is...
Interesting.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I think it's great.
It's really unusual, and I do really like it. It's a treat wine on the shelf for $27.50. It's something very different, that's for sure. And it feels really apt today because we're sitting here and it's literally 12 months to the day since we opened the doors to Vino Gusto.
Ooh.
So, I know.
Worth
Happy
a
birthday.
Treat wine, eh?
Yeah, worth a treat wine.
And let's pretend we're not drinking this after already having some champagne, Davey.
Yeah, we have had a little treat at lunchtime, haven't we? Which is very lovely. Thank you, Henry.
You're welcome.
Yeah, been very, very well looked after.
We really have. And we've got a chocolate cake waiting in our little mini kitchen as well. So thank you, Em, for that.
And you had a birthday card as well.
And
a birthday card. Yeah, we've been
all,
to lunch.
Yes.
We're not celebrating by having lunch at Lark Restaurant just down the road, but they did give us a lovely card.
They did. It's very, very lovely. Yeah. No, so that's great. Anyway, so thank you for coming today, Henry. Really, really lovely to chat to you. So I would like to ask you a little bit more about really, well, I mean, all sorts of things, but some of which you may not want to answer, I don't know. But really, so brand ambassador. So
yeah.
So I've met a couple of... So my route into wine shop ownership is not a conventional route at all, as most people know. And I've met a couple of brand ambassadors in the last year or so, you being one of them. And I think probably some of our listeners would hear, oh, brand ambassador for wine, that sounds really quite exotic. And what I'm intrigued to know is, what does it actually entail for you on a daily basis?
Well, yeah, no, it's a good question. And actually, interestingly enough, recently there was a decision at Liberty, the wine importer, obviously, for people that don't know, to sort of change our title slightly.
Okay.
So all of the three champagne brand ambassadors, we've moved to now be called brand development managers.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
So almost like brand manager rather than brand ambassador, because brand ambassador is sort of quite vague.
Cheerleader.
Well, it kind of conjures up an image of you just swilling champagne all day, which sounds very exciting.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. But, no, but it could be anything, you know, like someone spraying perfume in a shop in an airport. That's
sure.
a brand ambassador for something. So to better reflect our work, we've moved to brand development managers. So really that entails everything.
Okay.
It's a it's a mix of sales, marketing, brand management, reporting to the vineyard in France. Mm. So that's pretty much it day to day, which is obviously mixed in with quite a lot of drinking champagne as well.
Yeah, that must be really tough.
Yeah, it's hard, but yeah, no, it is a fantastic role. And actually, you know, I had quite an unconventional way into wine as well, like yourself.
Talk us through that then.
Yeah, so basically I was, as you can tell, I'm not French, but by my accent. But yeah, I was born in the northwest of England, South Cheshire. And actually for me, my passion in life was rugby for a long, long time. And it was always a dream really to play professional rugby. So I just went down that route, went to university in Bath. And then after that, thought this is a great opportunity to go and play rugby in France, learn a bit of French as well at the same time. So I took the decision to go and play rugby there for Lille in the north of France. So it's not really... Right.
Not champagne country.
Not champagne country. It's more beer country there.
Yeah, okay.
Which was quite enjoyable as well, straight out of university.
Yeah.
But quite strong beer as well, which I learned pretty quickly to to respect. So yeah, I went over to Lille, just thought I'd try my hand at playing for them. I played for the junior team to begin with, which wasn't professional. They just put me up in the president's house, and I worked in a little Irish pub for money, and that was great. And then they kept me on for the professional team. So I stayed there 3 years. Lille were pushing to basically get into the Pro D2, which is the second division of French rugby.
Okay.
And then in the final year, we got the promotion. So we're the first club ever from the north of France outside of Paris to get into this level of rugby.
Wow.
But unfortunately, something happened. There was dodgy deals going on, and the club folded. the club ended up folding.
This is the juiciest thing that's ever happened on our podcast.
Yeah, I won't be naming names, but anyway. No, but so at that point, my sister was actually living over in Champagne. So I thought, do you know what? I'm just going to move over to the Champagne region, play a bit of rugby for Epinay,
mm-hmm. okay.
and find a job in Champagne. So that's what I did.
Nice.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Yeah, so that was my unconventional route in. And then, as you know, once you get into wine, you just don't want to leave, because it's such a, you know, you're learning every day, and it's a passionate sort of subject, isn't it? So
sure.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Definitely. So then, am I right in thinking you met your wife over there?
Yep, correct. So I lived in Epinay for about 4 years.
And she is from Champagne.
She's from Champagne, yeah. She's from Epinay. And, yeah, she wooed me by pouring me copious amounts of champagne.
would she agree with wooing you?
Or? Well, actually, it was probably the other way around. Yeah. Yeah. But, no, it was, yeah, it was great. We met over there, and then we both decided to move back to England. She'd actually done a year abroad in England, so she knew what it was like, and I was quite keen to move back after 8 years in France. I was just missed the UK, but really wanted to still work in wine.
And so she knew about English weather then?
She did, yeah.
Okay.
Being that far north in France, though, it's not dissimilar.
Yeah. No, exactly, yeah, in Champagne, it's not, yeah, it's pretty similar weather.
Sorry, obviously very slightly warmer than it is here.
Yeah. Yeah, less rain, I'm thinking. Yeah, definitely less
it's
rain.
It's got to be, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It's got to be.
Yeah. But no, she was, for some reason, keen to move back. And yeah, we've just we've been back, I think, about four years now.
Great.
So what did you do from there, then?
So I actually had a little stint. When we moved back, I got a job for a vineyard in the Languedoc. So it was called Domaine Lequézerg. It was in the Terrasse du Larzac region. I'm not sure if you stock any Terrasse du Larzac wines or not, but...
No, we don't. Not at the moment.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting...
You're in the pubs, weirdly, sorry.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
Tangent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Terrasse du Larzac, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. There's a lot of... So I didn't really know much about other wines other than champagne. I was sort of a bit of a champagne geek, but was keen to venture out into other things. So that's when I started to do my WSETs and go work through them. So I was doing a bit of export for that vineyard, but based over here.
Sure.
Which was really good. And then I found this opportunity with Liberty Wines. And as it was brand ambassador for champagne, I jumped at the occasion.
What's not to love?
No, exactly, yeah.
So that was what, about 2020-ish?
So that was just after COVID.
Yeah.
It was a really weird interview process, actually, because it was all on Zoom.
Course.
So there was no face-to-face, it was like a series of Zoom interviews, and then when I finally got the job, I was sort of in the office, but no one else was there, because everyone was working from home still,
right.
So it was very strange, but it was, I suppose I was eased into it quite quite easily, quite nicely.
Well, they they really were strange times, weren't they? I mean, you know, around that time, we were squeezing a wine shop into a pub, and
But no, it was great to start working with Liberty Wines, a fantastic company. It was really my first experience in a bigger company as well, because I'd always worked in like small family vineyards or just, you know, small businesses.
Yeah.
So to have that experience with Liberty is was really new to me, but also quite exciting. And yeah, it's been fantastic. So
good. Well, we've loved working with you. So I think the last 9 or 10 months or so, I think we've probably had the bow on the shelves.
Yeah, it must be, mustn't it? Now it, the time has flown. I mean, yeah, we couldn't really be bigger fans of DeVoe, I don't think.
Yeah,
we,
a number of our customers will probably know of Henry through
definitely
attending tastings with him in the past.
Yeah, well, you were here, you were with us in December, you were with us in, when was it you were here doing a tasting? That was last autumn time, I think.
I've done, and then we did the portfolio tasting as well, which some people may have seen.
Yeah, that was early December, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, and then the other one, I don't know, I'm not sure. I lose track of time.
I think autumn time. So you've definitely been, you've been at least a couple of tastings that we've done, and we hope to get you back again soon, definitely.
Yeah.
Do you have a typical week? Where are you in a typical week? Because you obviously travel quite a lot.
Yes.
How much is in the UK? How much are you in France?
It really does vary. The nature of the job, because it is UK wide, I sort of have to travel all over the country and up to Scotland and then often over to France as well. But I think for me personally with DeVoe, I probably look at doing about 5 to 6 trips a year over there with customers. So Jake's we went on one, which was very fun.
It was great fun.
Quite a lot of champagne.
I was pleased to be introduced to some of the beer bars of France. Champagne.
Should I ask who led who astray? Or
you already know the answer, don't you?
So that's a fun part of the job, taking customers over. And usually what we do, we get the Eurostar and go for like an overnight trip to DeVoe. So yeah, that's excellent. So probably about 6 of them a year. There's like maybe, I'll probably try and be out maybe 2 or 3 days in trade each week. And then there's office time as well. So yeah, it is very varied, but lots of travelling. But yeah, it's good. That's what I like. I don't like really being strapped to a desk. It's not really my thing.
So you want to be out and about seeing customers.
No one in wine does.
No.
Wine is all about going and experiencing it.
Exactly.
Either with the people who make it, but actually probably more importantly in the UK with other people who enjoy the product, right?
Yeah. No, definitely. Like-minded people who...
You get to share your delicious champagne with so many people every week. Yeah. Which must be really... great fun.
Well, that's what I always say, that I've got a pretty easy job, because if I'm trying to persuade, you know, customers or prospects to buy champagne, who doesn't like champagne?
and it can't be hard to sell DeVoe champagne. It's just delicious, isn't it?
No, it is excellent. I think it's, people are always keen if you say you're coming around with that, you've got a few bottles of champagne open, you know, it's not many people say no to that.
I bet you're a really popular guest.
It's a great job.
So just to recap a little bit on DeVoe. So if I've got this right, I think DeVoe has been around since about the mid-1800s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got, from my point of view, really interesting. It's got a really strong history of having women at the helm as well.
Yeah, it does.
Known as Champagne Widows, I think, weren't they?
So interestingly, you've probably noticed, but a lot of champagne houses have these widows or the legacy of widows running the place. So the obvious one is Veuve Clicquot, Veuve being widow in French. DeVoe also has this legacy of about a 100-year period of 3 consecutive widows running the house. At that point, DeVoe was on the Avenue de Champagne. So if you've been over there, Perrier Jouet is in exactly the same spot. They basically bought it from DeVoe in the 1980s. And so, because there was no one in the DeVoe family left to carry the name forward, so basically they gave the whole operation to the growers of the Union au Bois in the Côte de Bar, so in the south of Champagne.
Yeah.
So that's why with most of the DeVoe champagnes, they're Pinot Noir dominant, because that's where we have our you know, the sort of chateau, if you like. And the vineyards are mostly from down in the Côte de Bar as well. So yeah, you'll mostly find DeVoe champagnes with dominance of Pinot Noir, and then Chardonnay sort of coming in second, and we don't use any Meunier.
Yeah, you don't use any Meunier, do you? Because of where you're situated.
Exactly, easy to remember, Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. And that's the DeVoe style. So Jake, I'm sure you could, you know, you've been there, tasted all the range. There's quite a specific style to the DeVoe, you know, Michel Parisot, a winemaker. He's got this, you know, his character that he puts into the wines.
Yeah, very much so. As far as I'm concerned, he's a genius. I love the very sort of fruit-forward Pinot style of the wines, but also some of the techniques used for your sort of your house wines, I suppose. I'm thinking specifically of the Cuvée D range.
Yeah.
The winemaking and the thoughts and philosophy that goes into those styles of wine is just so brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, Cuvée D having the Solera system that goes back to 90, remind me, is it
99? Yeah.
Adds so much complexity and texture and interest to the wine. It's just stunning. So for me, your flagship wine, the Cuvée D, is absolutely one of my favourite wines that we have in the shop downstairs. But then across the range, I love the dominance of Pinot Noir. The Cour de Bar is the Blanc de Noir that you have is great.
Yeah.
And the Coup de Nature as well, which, forgive me if I'm, but that is Blanc de Noir as well.
That is also Blanc de Noir, yeah. Although we don't market it as such because eventually, so the Coup de Nature is our first ever organic certified champagne.
Yeah.
And in the future, we released it just last year, so it's quite new. And this time it's 100% Pinot Noir, but in the future there might be some Chardonnay,
sure,
organic Chardonnay that goes in.
Okay.
So that's the plan. But for now, it's just, it's 100% Pinot Noir.
Jake, can you just remind us, you talked about Solera system. We have mentioned it briefly on the pod before, but can you just remind us about Solera systems?
Yeah, it's most famous in Jerez and Sherry production. That's where the sort of term Solera system comes from. But ultimately, it's multiple barrels from of wine from specific vintages that over time are blended together, leaving you with a very complex blended base wine from which you can then make the finished wine.
Thank you.
So that also in Cuvée D, for example, which is what we would refer to as a non-vintage wine, meaning that the wine itself isn't from a specific year. It's marketed as being aged for at least 5 years on its lees, so you know the base wine is at least 5 years old, but it's also blended with wine from that Solera system that dates back to 99. So you've got some really old, complex, interesting wine. Guaranteed.
Cuvée D, I think, is... Yeah, I love it. Absolutely love it.
It is a spectacular champagne, I think. It's not... I think you get so much value for money with all of the DeVoe wines, but especially the Cuvée D. Because it is, like Jake said, it's a non-vintage, but you do have... If you're someone who loves a vintage champagne, you get that autolytic flavour that comes through from the lees aging, and then on top of that, the older wines, which just add layers and layers of complexity, so...
It's very delicious. It's a non-vintage wine that you almost treat as a vintage style of champagne, isn't it? You probably could leave it alone for a little while and let those yeasty autolytic flavours develop for a little bit further.
It's hard to leave it alone though, isn't it?
It is.
Let's face it.
Just going to move on to the fact that of course all of the wines come in Magnum. And Henry will be better at explaining why that is, but the favourite thing I learned about DeVoe is that they refer to a bottle as a half Magnum.
I really like that. I'd forgotten. I remember you saying that
Magnum
before.
Magnum is ultimately the best size for a bottle of champagne.
It's the perfect size for two people when one of them's not drinking.
Yeah.
That sounds like the sort of thing you'd say. Yeah.
I still, maybe I heard that from you.
Henry, talk us through the Magnums.
So the Magnums at DeVoe, first of all, obviously, for those that have seen the Cuvée D, the bottle is in a different shape. And so it's slightly taller than normal bottles. So in a Magnum, it actually looks like double Magnum almost. It looks really, really, really cool. But in terms of the wine, so it's essentially the same blend, the same amount of reserve wines, but slightly different base years. So the Magnum's going to age for 2 years longer than the bottle. So you'll see on all of the DeVoe D range, it's written either aged at least 5 years or aged 7 years or more. So, the reason being is because the Magnums just need a bit of extra time in the cellar to really develop to the complexity that Michel Parisot, the winemaker, wants before he releases them. But the Magnums are superb. And yeah, I would always go for a Magnum. That's my
me well, too. Knowing, yeah. Sorry, I agree with Henry.
Yeah,
I assume that's why you bought one for the Eurostar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I think I remember the first champagne and croissant morning we did here. Wasn't the first bottle we opened was a Magnum of Davao, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think. Mm. Remember that? It was very popular.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, talking about the autolytic qualities of the wine, which is that sort of very yeasty, bready, biscuity sort of feel that you get from champagne with lovely sort of rich sort of texture and complexity, is incredible with very yeasty, delicious, lovely pastry.
Like Worcester's croissants, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it cuts through the fat of champagne. Goes really well with fatty foods, so like croissant, anything like that, works really well.
We were talking about this over lunch, actually, weren't we? How gastronomic champagne is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. People don't give it as much credit as it deserves for that. So yeah, no, it's definitely. And coming back to Davao, the Davao style is very gastronomic as well.
Yeah,
definitely.
The way Michel, there's, you know, even though their wines are so old and they've aged for such a long time, they've still retained that beautiful acidity. So they're not what we describe as flabby. They're not, you know.
Yeah,
you want that second glass, the acidity is still there, so that's the important thing, really.
Which makes me think of arguably my second favourite wine from Davao, which is the Ultra D.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a similar style, but with a little bit less residual sugar, so you get this sort of intense freshness and bracing acidity, bone dry and just phenomenal with foods, especially sort of, I don't know, the classic champagne pairing, so goat cheese, oysters, that sort of style.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful. It's I describe it as almost like the naked version of the
Cuvée
d'. Okay, sort of stripped back.
Exactly.
A bit.
So there's no added sugar. Well, there is a little tiny bit of two grams of sugar per liter. So it's really not much, and you just get that purest form of the champagne, and definitely a food wine. So.
Well, and that's interesting, isn't it? Because there is sometimes, I think, a conception that champagne is wonderful for an aperitif, maybe with a starter. But not everyone would think about drinking champagne all the way through a meal. So can we talk a bit about what you might pair champagne with then?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think obviously champagne is still a great aperitif wine. So really great way to start the meal, because actually the bubbles help open up your palate a little bit. Your palate sort of prepared then for what's coming next. I think,
so great scientific reasons why we like champagne
but personally I think it goes obviously very well with sort of shellfish, oysters, the scallops that we had before would probably be really quite tasty.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then you can also, if moving more into sort of starters or mains, you can also have champagne with quite creamy dishes. So even sort of a chicken with a creamy sauce can work quite well.
Yeah.
Or fattier foods. So pretty much, it sounds crazy, but pretty much anything goes with champagne.
Yeah, it would cut through a fatty food really well, actually, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Champagne and fried food is amazing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I get laughed at, but I love really good fish and chips with a glass of great fizz, whether it's champagne, whether it's an English fizz, whatever. Yeah. I think it's a great match.
No, definitely. That's the classic one. It does actually surprisingly go very well with
brilliantly,
that.
Brilliantly, doesn't it?
And then obviously you can go straight through. You've got the rosé, if you want to have rosé with, I don't know, let's say like the trout that we had earlier, or the or a salmon or a fish.
Yes.
And then you could also have a demi-sec, which is our sweeter version. So later on I'm doing a wine dinner and we're going to end with the demi-sec for the dessert.
Nice.
So yeah, there really is a huge variety and many options with champagne.
Yeah.
I think.
I agree.
Well, I thought you were going to say something more then.
No. I'm just the cheerleader.
But yeah, really, I think just champagne also is about enjoyment as well. So just whatever, just open a bottle, enjoy it. I don't like to take it too seriously. I just think it's for enjoyment, people having a good time and celebrating. So yeah, that's my thought on that.
That's what wine is ultimately really all about, isn't it?
And exactly.
And champagne can be taken too seriously. It's not a cheap product, but open it in celebration, open it alongside some delicious food and
just enjoy
and love
really,
it.
Isn't
it? Exactly.
No, that's brilliant.
Good.
Excellent.
Did you have anything else on your
I don't think I did today. No, nothing else, I don't think. No, just really nice to have you here chatting with us, Henry.
We've ever been
jointly. Yeah, I've got three lines of scribbles today. Thank you so much. It's been lovely to have you here, and we hope to get you back for a tasting soon as well. So
absolutely.
We'll work on something soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice. Well, yeah, thank you for inviting me on, and happy birthday again.
Thank you very much.
Great stuff.
Thanks, guys. See you soon.
Thanks a lot.